So, after Yosef is sold into slavery, things do not go well in the house of Jacob. Jacob is totally distraught, inconsolable. His father Yitzchak, who's aware, because he's a great prophet, but he sees Hashem as preventing his son from knowing, so he infers that he's not supposed to tell him either. And Jacob's sons are racked with guilt. Now, from the brothers of Leah, Yehuda emerges as the leader. And as I mentioned last night's class, he actually got a special tunic even. Not a Xander's possum, not a colorful coat, but he was set apart with a certain distinction and charged with responsibility. Yaakov was looking for a leader, right? So Reuven forfeited that. Shimon and Levi after Shechem, that wasn't good either. So Yehuda emerges as the natural leader. Who gets blamed if something goes wrong? The leader gets blamed. Who got blamed after the sale of Yosef? Yehuda. They said to Yehuda, had you put your foot down, we would have listened to you. And it was so bad that Yehuda essentially left home. He couldn't deal with it. And he disappears for a significant amount of time. And he's on his own journey, his own odyssey, if you will. And this is beyond the purview of the few minutes we have today to talk about where Yehuda went and what he did. He marries, he has three children. The children marry, and the children takes their life prematurely. And the woman that they marry, both brothers marry the same woman successively. Her name is Tamar, and she's a very righteous woman. And she desperately craves to join the Jewish people in the family of Yaakov. And she's hoping to have an opportunity to be a wife to Shelah, which is the third son. But Yehuda has had enough of that. He's not taking chances anymore. So Yehuda kind of just pushes her off and tells her, no, it's okay, whatever, go home and we'll figure this out. He's not really clear with her. And the truth is Yehuda was not right. But Tamar put him in a difficult position. Bottom line, Tamar realizes that this is going nowhere and that Yehuda has no intention of allowing her to marry her son. And so she sets Yehuda up for what is a very difficult story to understand. Very difficult to understand. Yehuda, one of the great tzaddikim of all time, ends up cohabiting, as it were, with the strange woman who he doesn't realize is Tamar, is actually his daughter-in-law. And then the word comes that your daughter-in-law has been unfaithful and she's pregnant. And Yehuda is incensed. How could she do this? But she wisely made sure to take some personal effects. And she sends a personal effects to Yehuda. She says, before I'm prosecuted, just maybe you notice this. Maybe you know who this belongs to. Because that's the guy who got me pregnant. And Yehuda sees this and he says, She's right. And just in a word, and just so you understand a little bit how this worked, Levirate marriages is when a man dies without any children, so his brother has the opportunity to bring children into the world, or a child, and name the child after the deceased brother, so his seed is not totally liberated. Now, before Matan Torah, it didn't necessarily have to be a brother, it could have been a member of the family. And we actually see this by extension with Ruth. Boaz is not a brother, but he's a member of the family, so to speak. So Yehuda is a member of the family, that could work too. That wouldn't be an act of unfaithfulness. And so when Tamar proves who it is, and Yehuda realizes that he is the one who's in the wrong, so everything changes. And that brings us up to the narrative right now. This is at the end of Revi, at the end of the fourth narrative, where we hear about the birth that results from that union. And like a lot of things in the Torah, sometimes the holiest, the most lofty, the most incredible realities come about through the lowliest and the most like unbelievable reality. It's through this pregnancy and this union that you'll see the Mashiach is born. It comes the birth of a Jewish Messiah, or the antecedent of the Jewish Messiah. So that's what we're going to learn about today, about the actual birth. This would be the second multiple birth that's recorded in the Torah. The first multiple birth is with Rivka, Rebecca, Jacob and Esau. And that was an eventful birth, as you might remember. Eventful because Esau came out with somebody holding on to his heel, and that was Yaakov, who was desperately trying to come out first, but was overpowered by Esau. And that's not such a good story.
Cain and Abel weren't
coming at the same time. No, no. And here's the second multiple birth. So chapter 38, verse 27. And so it came at the time of her birth. Lo and behold, it's a multiple. There are twins. So Rashi notes that here, when it talks about in verse 27, the ace lidita, at the time of birth, and says vehine se'omim. Now you might remember that by Rivka, uberivka huemer, vayimlu yomeha leledes. The Torah's description was a little different. The gestation reached the full development. So why is it that here it's at the time of her birth, and over there she reached full gestation? So Rashi says, the reason is that over there, with regard to Rivka, lemeluyim, she gave birth with a full pregnancy, there was a full pregnancy, full days of gestation, which meant it was after 9 months. Vekan, and in this case, it was lachaserim. The Gemara tells us that if a baby is born in the 7th month, he can also survive. It's not even a preemie. So some babies can have 7 months of gestation and come out just fine, and some babies need 9 months of gestation. The baby who needs 7 months of gestation will come out at 7 months. The baby who needs 9 months but came out prematurely in the 8th month is in big trouble. But some babies can be born after 7 months, and that was the case with Tamar. She gave birth at the 7 months, which helps us understand why it says be'et lidita, at the time of her birth, because the Sefarno says it wasn't until the time of birth that they actually realized, uh-oh, we got multiples here. Like with Rivka, this was known earlier. The ultrasound wasn't working. So the Sefarno says it was only at this point. And why is that relevant? Because somehow the midwife has a red string ready. How'd she have the red thread ready? She didn't donate to the Kabbalah Center. Like, right? How was it that she had the red thread? And the answer is, you just gotta like hit it over there. Just rotate it slightly. It's good. So the answer is that when it came the time of birth, she saw this was going to be multiples. And she knew all about the Jewish people and multiples and issues and who's first. I better be ready over here. I'd be ready with that red thread so we don't have any trouble. And this is the first time we hear about the red thread. Radak says, this was unlike the case with Rivka. With Rivka, they found that early on, in the middle of her pregnancy already. She knew very well that she was having twins. There was this whole wrestling match going on within. But Tamar did not know this. So it's Be'es Lidita, and it's Te'omim. And Rashi notes once again here, in a contrast to Rivka, the word Te'omim comes out Malay, full. There's a Vav. It's spelled full. Ulahalan, by Rivka, it says Tomim. So here there's an Aleph, and there isn't. And strangely, there, we just said it was a full gestation. So if anything, a fuller word should have been used by Rivka. Here is a gestation that was minimal. We should have had a minimal description. Tomim, not Te'omim. Why is the word written full here? So Rashi says this is because Lefi Sheha Echad Mehem Rasha. When Jacob and Esau, that first multiple, one turns out to be a very wicked person. And that's Esau, of course. Aval Elu, but these two, even though they have a huge wrestling match and the way out, but they were Shneim Tzaddikim. They were both righteous. And this is very important, Rashi, because we'll soon see later about the question of whose persona reflects what kind of Avodat Hashem. Hold on to that thought. And so now that she knows that there are multiple, and she knows that it's really important in this family to make sure we know who came at first. Vayi Vilidita. So it came at the time of actual delivery. Vayitain Yad. One baby, he stretched forth a hand. So this tiny hand comes out. Vatika chamieledes vatik shal yodoi shoni. She immediately ties a red thread around his hand. Lamer, she wanted to say, ze yotzerishin. This one went out first. Now, Rashi says, what does it mean, vayitein yod? What do you mean he gave a hand? So he says this means shehotzi ha'echad, one of the twins stretched forth his hand, yodi lechutz, outside. It's like In Yiddish, they say, when you want to shake hands, give a hand. Give a hand. I'm not giving my hands away. But with stretch forth your hands is called give a hand, euphemistically. So in Hebrew, it's that same idea. Give a hand. Give a hand means that that baby stretched forth his hand. And what happened was, after the hand made it outside, so after she tied the scarlet thread, hechazira, the baby withdrew the hand back inside. So why did she tie a thread around? What was up with that? So Rabbi Avram, the son of the Rambam, says that the Mialedes was not a rabbi. She was not even a rebbetzin. She didn't know halachas. She didn't know that birth is from the time of crowning, when the baby's head comes out. Whoever sticks his hand out first is not the firstborn. It's whose head gets out first. But she didn't know that. She just knows this family is very particular who comes out first. So the first sighting was a hand, so she tied a string around it. She didn't really know better. And so, like, Lamar was like her saying. She was saying, this is what I think. I think this is the firstborn. In fact, it wasn't the case, but that's what she thought. The Or Chaim has this interesting play on words, that the word shani, which means scarlet, is the same Hebrew letters that spell the word sheni, which means second. So actually, she was marking the second. She was marking the second, and you'll see why it's important to know that the second actually tried to come out first. And that she did mark, because had she not put the thread on, we wouldn't know that it was somebody else's hand. How would you know whose hand it was? But here, she did mark the hand, and we do know that that shani ends up being the sheni, the second one. As the Torah continues describing, this is like an incredible narrative, middle of the Torah, like the details of the delivery room. Like we're talking about the actual emergence of the baby. So one baby sticks his hand up, she's tying red threads, the baby pulls his hand back in. When his hand returns, his brother came out. How do we know it's his brother? Well, because no red thread. So we know how that happened. Vatoimer, and she said, wow, ma poratzta alecha poretz. What an incredible strength you have, little guy. How did you push your way out? Vayikra shmoi poretz. It was such a remarkable thing that everybody just called him poretz, which means force. Some kind of power, some force. So this business of poratzta should sound very familiar. Because Yaakov's dream is about uforatzta. And then when Yaakov is very successful, it says, vayifrotz. So there's the promise of uforatzta, there's the somewhat fulfillment of uforatzta, and now there's the baby of uforatzta. So Rashi says, what is the meaning of ma paratzta alecha peretz? What does that mean, paratzta? Paratzta, Rashi says, means chazakta alecha chizek. What a powerful little baby this is. How has he found the strength to somehow overpower his brother and push his way out first? So she was amazed by this. This is unbelievable. And that's what she expressed her astonishment in that way. Now, kimeshiv yodai, incidentally, does not mean that the baby actually pulled his hand back. The Sefarno says there's some kind of invisible force that propels these babies. Somehow one baby gets pulled back in. The baby who stuck his hand out gets pulled back in. And it's the other baby, the parrot's baby, who pushes himself out. So that's why she said, paratzta alecha. He overpowered you. He didn't pull his hand back in. His hand was forced back in. There was some kind of rotation going on in there. He pushed himself out. As the Bar Yitzchak explains in the words of Rashi, your brother overpowered you because you were on the way out already. I mean, you stretched your hand out. You're ready to shake somebody's hand. And next thing we know is you're coming out next.
It would be too dangerous to come out with a hand first.
Yeah. That could be, but from a hand first means he's in the area. So he could have pulled his hand back in and then stuck his head out.
Right.
So, right, I'm not saying he would have been born like this, mm-hmm. but if he had his hand out, he was in the queue to come out.
Mm-hmm. He was still considered the first.
No?
No.
No, absolutely not. He's not considered the first at all. That's why Rabbi Avrambam says that she was ignorant. She didn't know the halachas. She thought, first sighting, that's it, the firstborn. It doesn't go by first sighting. It goes by first head out. So that's the business of he pushed himself out. And the Ramban says that this idea of paratzta alecha paratz is the same terminology that we read by Yaakov's success, vayifritz l'roif. And it indicates that sometimes there's a barrier, an obstacle. And with force, you overcome the barrier or the obstacle. Perhaps this would be like a dam. When something is held back, And then when it's held back, and then it pushes, it surges forward. That would be the idea of this Paratzta Alecha Peretz. The Radak says, what are you, some kind of royal figure? Yeah, just push it, perfect. The Radak says that we say about a king that Melech Peretz Goder Ve'ein Meichen V'yodei. The king can have the gate. He can just decide that a wall should be taken down, and the wall goes down. Interestingly, in the walls of the old city of Jerusalem, which are not really the original walls, and for the most part not built on the original foundations at all, but you know, when you come through, right near Mamila, what's that gate called? I don't remember the second gate.
Shopping center?
Right at the top of the shopping center.
The Lion's Gate.
That's Lion's Gate, that's the Lion's Gate. So the Lion's Gate, like, it's not really a gate. It's like you walk right through. Well, there's an arch, there's a door on the side, but then you walk, everybody just walks right through the open space here. What happened there? Well, what happened is Franz Wilhelm, the Kaiser, decided that he had to go through with his motorcade. But the motorcade couldn't fit. As we know, the tank got stuck in the gate, Lion's Gate. The tank couldn't get through either. It's a very narrow, strange, you know, kind of pass. And it was built that way specifically to stop an invader. But Franz Josef, the Kaiser Wilhelm, he wanted to go through. So what do? He had the wall broken down. Plain and simple, there's a picture of it, of his motorcade riding through. And then that's when the Jewish people living in Yerushalayim then said, you see, that's a melech. A melech once, melech poiretz geder. So that's the idea of a king. So Radak says, this is an element of royalty here, where this baby has this royal element. He just simply overrides the obstacles and comes right out. It's almost like there was a wall, and he came forth anyway. So his name is Peretz, and then we go to Lamed, Pasuk 30, which is the last Pasuk in the fourth reading. Va'achar, and after this extraordinary display of strength, this little baby who pushes himself right to the front and gets out first. Va'achar yatza achiv, then his brother goes out. Asher al yodeh hasheni. How do we know he was the second? Well, because he had the scarlet thread on his hand. Va'yikro shmoi Zorach. His name was called Zorach. Why was his name called Zorach? So Rashi, very interestingly, starts talking about, why does it say Asher al Yodei Hashoni? He says, do you realize, if you count up the verse, you'll end up with the word Ar Yodois, hands, four times? Four times Yad. There's Vayi B'yes Lidato, Vayi Ten Yad. He puts a hand. And then here, the fourth time, four times hand. In three verses, the word hand shows up four times. It's the same hand. So what's up with that? So Rashi says, all of this is futuristic. There's much, much more than meets the eye here. This story is a powerful story. It's a formative story. And we're talking here, this alludes to what will happen to the future progeny of this baby. The Arba Yodes Ksuvis Kan are connected to correspond to Arba Charomim, Shemo al Ochon, Sheyotze Mishom. Cherim is when something is set aside for a heavenly purpose. You could call it Hegdash, you could call it Cherim. Now there was a man whose name was Ochon. He was from the tribe of Yehuda. And he was a great grandson of Zorach. And what happened is, when they captured the city of Jericho, Jericho was the maiden conquest. It was the first city they conquered in the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael. So when they conquered that land, so the Shlal Ha'ir, the spoils of the city, were going to be set aside to be given to Hashem through Yehoshua, as it says in the seventh chapter of the book of Yehoshua, that Yehoshua is sets it aside as a cheder. Now when you abuse or take advantage of something which is set aside for a holy purpose, that's called mi'ila. That means it's an act of sacrilege. So Ochan was guilty of taking for himself. He was a corrupt fellow. And because he did this, we ended up in some big trouble. The Jewish people had a lot of trouble. And Yehoshua had to find out who the culprit was, and they had to be dealt with. So this is the four hands. His hand four times, He seems to have lost himself, lost his strength, while his great-grandson Achan lost a different struggling match with his Yetzirah. And he ended up stretching out his hand inappropriately four times. The Yeshemre. There are others who say that the strange phenomenon of the hand mentioned four times is Keneged Arba Dvarim Shalakach, the four things that Achan actually took. What did he take? That the Tanakh tells us took Aderes Shinar, V'shtei Chatiches Kesef, Shomosayim Shkalim, V'lashein Zahav. He took some kind of wrap, some robe, a cloak, a very valuable cloak. He took two large chunks of silver, and he took a bar of gold, as it's talked about in the Gemara in Bereishis Rabbah. Okay, so now we know what's up with the Arba Yodis. This is all futuristic. What does it have to do with Pshat? That's a really good question. So it would seem that the fact that Yad gets mentioned there four times in three verses is a disquieting fact. It doesn't just fit. So okay, you mentioned Yad. It shouldn't be there. Like, there's got to be something that the Torah is telling us. So what is the Torah actually telling us? It's alluding to something. So that's why Rashi has to reach for a drash, for a homily here. Although the homily is lifted straight from open verses. It's not an oral tradition. Open verses in Tanakh. But Rashi has to sew those verses to these verses in order to make sense of the fact that it says Arba Yodis. But hold this thought because you'll see. Why is he called Zarach? Vayikra Shmoy Zarach. Rashi says, Al Shem Zrichas Maris Hashani. Because of the flaming image, the color of that crimson thread, that red thread. So we'll help you a little bit to know that the Medrash Seichel Tov says Zorach is the one who's shown first. He's the first rays, so to speak. He stuck his hand out first. And the Chizkuni says that the red scarlet color was reminiscent of the sun, which is very red. Last night, apparently, in the middle of the night, it was a very red moon. I didn't go outside to see it. But the sun, especially when the sun goes down over water, it goes down in a red haze. And actually, the water turns red. Like the water is reddish. So that's the shani, the scarlet rays that cast themselves across the seas, across the water of the lake or the ocean. That's what we're talking about here when we discuss this idea of the shani.
That's shani, not sunny waves, but shani.
Very good. Okay, you're very punny today. Shani waves, or shani isles, not sunny isles. Okay, I got that.
Our illustrious premier's favorite. Prime minister's favorite.
Okay, so This will bring us to an amazing rumination from the Rebbe here. Now that we know that there's this business of Achan, clearly in Rashi we have a business of Achan, and clearly in Rashi there's a business of the sun, right? There's the rays of the sun, the red of the sun. So take a look at this. In the Biurim book, please open to page Reishu Dalet, Simin Lamed Dalet. We begin here with a quote from what's called Agadat Bereishis, the Agada, one of the midrashim that accompanies the book of Genesis. Here's the quote. And let me preface this by saying that in Rashi, we have primarily discussed Zorach now. We said, Ma paratzta alecha peretz, but the pasuk goes to talk about Rashi, where Rashi really, all Rashi says with paratzta is chazakta. You have a lot of strength. That was an act of extraordinary strength. But when it comes to Zorach, we get a lot of descriptions. Zorach is Achan. Achan has a problem. He takes what he shouldn't take. There's four hands over here. He's blazing like the sun. But in the Agadah Bereishis, it comments on Peretz. And it says, Peretz is born, Zeh Mashiach. This is the Messiah. Peretz is the Mashiach, or the ancestor of Mashiach. Shenemar, as it is written about Mashiach, Allah ha-Peretz lifnehem. The disruptor will go before them. Mashiach is called the disruptor. He will disrupt the ebb and flow of life as we know it. As soon as Mashiach comes, speedily, and in our days, everything will be disrupted. All the plans you had, they'll be put to naught in a moment. Oh, that's a wonderful thing.
Did you buy travel insurance?
Ay vey, you remind me of this famous story. The rabbi spoke on the last day of Pesach about Mashiach coming, and he was so serious and sincere about it that the man came home very despondent, and his wife said, "Why are you so upset? It's Pesach today." He said, "Today's sermon killed me." "What did he speak about?" "He said Mashiach is coming after you're ready for Mashiach." She said, "What's wrong with that?" He says, "Are you kidding? We just invested, we bought new sheep, we just have new geese and 3 new chickens. I painted the barn. Now Mashiach's going to come?" And his wife said, "The same God who protects us from the Tsar and the Cossacks, he'll protect us from Mashiach too." How foolish, right? You're worried about your cruise. Mashiach is going to disrupt everything in the most wonderful way. So Mashiach's called the Peretz. He's the mover, the shaker, the disruptor. So that's what he says. Peretz is Mashiach. This is the birth. This is not a birth. This is the birth of the Messiah. This is the first messianic birth ever recorded. A Jewish messianic birth recorded. So the Rebbe comments. In the book called Bahir, which means radiance, this book was written by Reb Nechunya ben Akona. And it's the second major book of Kabbalah authored. And for a long time was the only book of Kabbalah we had because the Zohar went into hiding. And it's not discovered until centuries later by Reb Yitzchak de Leon, as one of the Spanish Rishonim. So the Sefer HaBoyer, a very, very foundational book of Kabbalah, second to the Zohar itself, book of luminescence, maybe you want to call it, or radiance. So the book of radiance says like this, that Zorach, which means radiance, or rays, Al Shem HaChama, the name comes from the sun. Now, why would we call the sun Zorach? So the Sefer HaBoyer says, HaZorechet Tamid, the sun is always shining. So the name Zorach is shining. Sounds like an Aboriginal name, shining one. The name shining one comes from the sun, because the sun is always shining. So in Aboriginal parlance, his name would have been Shining Sun. The Ilu Peretz really means disruptor. That's what his name means. He's Nikra Al-Shem Halavana. He comes from the terminology associated with the moon. Why? Well, the moon is Nifretz Esli'itim. The moon is always being disrupted. Sometimes, in fact, it's entirely broken down or disappears. So the word Peretz can mean disrupt or could mean to dismantle, even destroy. But the moon is destroyed, if you will, or dismantled, and then v'nivnes le'itim. There are other times when the moon is building. So in proper English, the moon waxes and wanes. Wanes and waxes. And the Peretz is a name that symbolizes the waning of the moon, the dissipating of the moon, like we had last night. Oh, lunar eclipse.
That's a weakness. That's not a force.
Yeah, this sounds terrible, huh? A weakness. It's exactly what the Rebbe asks. Very good. Ulufi zeh nimtza shezorach nailo miperetz. Who's higher? Zorach or Peretz? Zorach is higher. I mean, he's always shining. Kamailas hachama al halavana. He's got the power of solar energy versus the radiance of the moon. Who's more powerful? Of course the sun is. Madua Eifai, why then, with Peretz, who we just said is Mashiach, this is about the birth of the Messiah. Well, why would we metaphorize the birth of the Messiah in lunar terms? It should be in solar terms. Solar energy, the power of the sun, always shining, ever shining. And interestingly enough, in many places in Torah literature, Mashiach's coming is likened to sunrise, and Mashiach is likened to the sun. S-U-N. In fact, just last week we were learning about the Gid Hanasha, the sciatic nerve, and we read that the Sefer HaChinuch, in poetic terminology, says when the sun rose for Yaakov and accelerated the process of his healing, that's symbolic of Mashiach coming, who will be like our sun that will rise, S-U-N, and this sun that will rise, its rays will heal us. So it's one of many examples where Mashiach's coming is likened to the sun. So what's going on over here?
The sun's rays will heal us.
The sun's rays. The Gemara says there are healing properties.
I'm just saying it's the opposite now. If you have too much sun, God forbid.
You just said it. Too much sun. I didn't say too much sun. If you have too little sun, it's no good either. Vitamin D. A doctor told me that he once was dealing with a child who hadn't been out of the house. The winter was so cold. The kid had not been out of the house literally for 6 months. And the kid developed something called rickets because he was missing vitamin D. So he'll never forget it. It's like the spookiest thing. The kid was white like a ghost. And he never went out.
So not nothing too much of both.
That's a general commentary on life. You can have too little or too much most of the time. With one exception. Everything in moderation with one exception. What's that?
Yiddishkeit.
The only thing is too much Yiddishkeit. Oh, that's too Jewish, please. Too much Torah. Would you go and watch The Simpsons now? You know, So this is a real problem. This is such a problem, Mark. You actually asked the question outright. Even before the Rebbe got to the question, you go, what? So Zerach, the number two man, that's the son. And the number one guy, that powerful disruptor who pulls ahead, he's the moon. How's that work? V'yesh levar zeis al pi amavur b'chassidus. So the Rebbe says, from a Hasidic lens, or through the prism of Hasidic teaching, this becomes very beautiful. You see, Hachama v'halavona, the sun and the moon, Reim zeis la'avedas Hashem, respectively are indicative of different pathways of serving Hashem. There's a path of tzaddikim, the path of the woolly righteous, and then there's the path of Baalei Tshuva, of the returnee. It's not a straight path. It's not direct. It's not continuous. Avodas HaTzadikim, the service or subservience of tzaddikim, is a beautiful thing to behold. It's Tmidim Kesidram. There's a constancy, a perfect consistency, a wonderful cadence. Everything always follows the right punctuation. L'loy shinuyim. There are no changes. No surprises. The tzaddik is dependable. Have you heard that terminology, old dependable? The tzaddik is old dependable. You can depend on the tzaddik. He'll be there on time with every hair in place. He'll dot every I, he'll cross every T. He doesn't miss mitzvahs. No sins of omission, no sins certainly not of commission. He's got it all right. It's b'doyme l'oir HaShemesh. It's like the sun. The sun doesn't change. You don't get a larger sun or a smaller sun. It's the sun is the same sun. It rises and sets. And it's you can set your clock to it. The sun is the sun. The ilu avedas habali tshuva. Conversely, the Yiddishkeit endeavor and the spiritual subservience of the Baal Tshuva is very the Baal Tshuva sinks before he rises. And it's from that Yerida, it's from that retreat that the Baal Tshuva gathers his strength and leaps forward. Bedoyme, very much like Lelavona, to the moon or the lunar cycle, sheyesh ba chisaron u'miloy. There's a full moon, a half moon, a no moon, and then a rebirth again. So that's kind of the trajectory of the Baal Tshuva, is a reflection of the path of the moon.
Faratzta is leaping forward.
Oh, Faratzta is leaping forward. Tzadikim, they never really leap forward all the way. Who leaps forward? The Baal Tshuva leaps forward. Zeu gama hevdel ben Peretz l'Zorach. This then would be the obvious distinction between Peretz and Zorach. You see, Zorach reim is la'avedas ha'tzadikim. Zorach is, he's like a shining sun. And shining sun, he's like a tzaddik. Sha'or teirosom va'avedosom zereach ba'oifen t'midi v'kavua. The light, the rays of their Torah study, of their servitude and devotion to Hashem, it's a constant. It's the beautiful rays. It's always shedding light. It's always radiant. V'ilu Peretz, but conversely, Peretz, he identifies with the Baal Tshuva because the Aveda of the Baal Tshuva is Bederech Pritzas Goder. The Baal Tshuva has to throw some walls down. The Baal Tshuva has to disrupt his life.
The Mashiach comes from Baal Tshuva.
You'll soon see. The Mashiach is Paratz to Alecha Peretz. The Mashiach, he's the disruptor. The Mashiach is the one who gathers this incredible strength to surge forward. What does that mean? There is an element of tshuva within the tzaddik. You see, consistency is also much like constancy. It's always. It's predictable. But Mashiach is anything but predictable. The Aveda of a Tzaddik, which is disruptive, the Aveda of the Tzaddik, which is unpredictable, the Aveda of the Tzaddik, which seems to suddenly take on a new form, transcends the norms, the expectation. That means that a Tzaddik does tshuva. Yitzias mahagbaloisav, it means being able to go out, to get past the limitations, and the limitations would be the normal expectation in Avedas Hashem, in drawing close to Hashem. And that's why Peretz, he's the Mashiach. The birth of a Jewish Messiah is all about the unusual, the disruptive, the non-typical. Lefi shechidushi shel Mashiach, and this answers your question, the chidush, the novelty of Mashiach is an Avedas HaTshuva. It, the service of tshuva, the path of tshuva, the ideal of tshuva, that's really what's symbolic of Mashiach's virtue. Ukimurumas bekach sheshmoi shemashiach hu mizera David. Mashiach is always identified with David HaMelech, the seed of David. Why? About David HaMelech, it says in the Gemara, in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, Hekim Oyla Shel Tshuva. He established the yoke of tshuva. He took upon himself, if you will, that frame of tshuva. And therefore, David became symbolic of tshuva. And fascinatingly, this whole business of Yehuda and Tamar, what is Yehuda called in this whole story? About tshuva. Yehuda is the original Baal tshuva. Why? Because Yehuda, that's why I began today's narrative with the story of Yehuda, leaving his brothers, going off the path, doing very strange things. We don't even interpret this in the communities where it was customary to read the Targum, the interpretation. This particular story was not even interpreted in the everyday language because it's so difficult to wrap your head around and can be misconstrued. There's an interesting sikha that Rebbe asked that Reuven is also about tshuva. Reuven did what he did and he spent the rest of his days crying. And Yehuda does tshuva, and we make Yehuda into the big Baal tshuva. And Yaakov talks about that later on, but Reuven doesn't get credit as a Baal tshuva. So the Rebbe says there's a simple difference. From Reuven's tshuva, what happened? Yosef got sold because he went away to do tshuva. He dropped the ball. From Yehuda's tshuva, Tamar's life was saved. And so was, and Peretz and Zerach were born. In other words, tshuva has to be effective. The tshuva has to make a difference in somebody's life. And Yehuda then represents the real Baal tshuva. And David HaMelech, who is the seed from Shevet Yehuda, and becomes the icon or face of Yehuda, he's the real Baal tshuva. K'maymer HaZoyar, the Zoyar says, you know what Mashiach will do? What nobody else did before. Mashiach asa, Mashiach will come, says the Zohar. La'asova tzadikaya b'tiyuvta. To bring tzadikim to the level of Baal tshuva. So now it makes so much sense. And incidentally, according to this, we can understand how the birth of Peretz is contrasted with the birth of Zarach. And Rashi mentions Achan, and Achan with the four hands. Because what does Achan have to do ultimately? Tshuva. So from the path of pure righteousness, without any challenges, and without ever transcending yourself, where did the seed of Zarach lead? It led to an Achan. And it was only Peretz who could save Achan in the end. And that's the idea that fits so snugly into Rashi, who describes in detail how Zerach's birth is sort of foretelling the story of Achan, but that's preceded with the birth of Peretz, because Peretz is the real Baal Tshuva, and that's why Peretz is synonymous and identified with the Mashiach. And before we let everybody go, I'm talking to the people on Facebook. Please go to ChabadFlamingo.com/donate. Because the other thing that accelerates the coming of Mashiach is tzedakah. And we have an unusual situation where every dollar that you are going to give before 9 o'clock tonight is worth not one, but three. And it's going to accelerate the coming of Mashiach. And it's something we can all do together. And I'd really appreciate it. So if you like watching this and you enjoy the Torah that you're learning, please be a part of this. Thank you very much. Sei gesund. L'chaim.